calling. Now don't look to us. Phony Beatlemania is bitten the dust. London calling. See, we ain't got no. Welcome again to Cottage Talk. I'm Russ Goldman, and co-host, and with me today will be David Holly. In this episode, we will be previewing the upcoming match for Fulham in the FA Cup against Sunderland at Craven Cottage tomorrow. Before that, we will discuss the latest with the end of the January transfer window for Fulham. We do have some breaking news, I guess you could say, about an hour ago with some players leaving on loan. We will be talking about that to start the show. After that, we will have another edition of the Cottage Talk Controversy Roundtable, which includes us debating subjects I put on the Cottage Talk Facebook page for fans to comment on. We will be doing that a little bit later. Before we do anything, I have to welcome my co-host to the show. First, David, how you doing?
Hi, Russ, and I know we spoke offline, but I want to, again, to congratulate you on your excellent success. I'm really pleased for you over here. You must be feeling, you know, really pumped up. I was really, you know, I was dreading you being deflated today after, you know, a loss, but obviously you must be really full of air today, so congrats to you and the Patriots.
Yeah, thank you very much. I'm full of hot air, I guess you could say. I'm totally, you know, again, it's funny, David, I'm going on basically adrenaline. You can probably hear it in my voice. I've lost my voice a little bit, so you're going to have to help me, excuse me, through this show. It was a wonderful night last night, and I described it to you the way that the Patriots won this. You know, again, it would be a similar situation. A good analogy would be Fulham in the Europa League final with Marek Rodak in net on penalties and saving a penalty to win the Europa League final. That's the comparison, because the New England Patriots won a crazy game in a crazy way at the very end with a rookie who actually made an interception to win the game for the Patriots. So it really was an incredible day, an incredible night, and I'm exhausted, but I'm looking forward to talking Fulham with you, my friend, and we'll get through this, and we do have some news, and I look forward to going through it with you.
Smashing. No, I just got to answer a brief case, Ben. I'm sure he's listening, yeah? Just before on air, he was saying, we're talking about tomorrow's lineup, and he's surprised to hear that there is a kit out brigade already, and saying that, you know, this is an interesting point. Had Kit Simons been there from the start of the season, we'd be eighth in the table, statistically.
Right.
Well, that's true on an average, but if you remember, the start of the season was pretty tough, and our record against the higher teams isn't very good, so I'm not sure if you can extrapolate that average all the way across. So it would be interesting. I know it's all hypothetical speak, Russ.
Sure.
But
would we be
eighth though if Kit had been there from the start? Yes, statistically on what we have done, but I'm not so sure, because, you know, we had a real tough start there, and I'm not sure if, you know, we would have hit the ground running even with Kit in charge. I'm sure it would have been better than with McGath. I mean, that's not hard, is it, obviously? But
no.
It's interesting. So, I don't know. And, you know, obviously, I've seen quite a lot of disquiet today on Twitter about Kit, and also about the owner, unfortunately, because some people are starting to question his investment and stuff. And so, I guess these are all things we're going to discuss in the show today.
Absolutely. And listen, I've seen the same things, David, and many fans are disappointed that Fulham have not made more moves in the January transfer window. And I definitely understand that, because, again, every transfer window, everyone gets excited, expects new players to come in. And seriously, I do understand why there is that feeling right now. My only thought is that, you know, again, like you said, I've seen some negativity towards Shad Khan, seeing some negativity towards Kit. I just want to remind everyone that we actually do have someone in charge now who's now, I guess you could say, getting his feet wet, which also might be a factor why this January transfer window is a little bit different. That would be Mike Rigg, director of football. So, again, he's still getting his feet wet in the situation. So maybe that's a factor to go into this as well. You know, again, we did bring back some players out on loan. They do feel like new signings. I'm talking about Kaká and Ryan Tunnicliffe, because they were not with us at the beginning of the season. But listen, I certainly understand why fans are disappointed that nothing's happened yet. My only argument right now is that I think we need to wait until the window is shut. You know, again, you never know what can happen. It didn't sound promising from what I read from Kit's presser. But you know what? You never know, because things happen at the last minute. So let's wait to see exactly what happens, David, before casting judgment. But you are right. I've noticed it a great deal today. People are disappointed right now. But let's see how it all plays out. All right. And let's start here, because I definitely want to start with the January transfer window. And let's start with Brian Ruiz. Okay. This is not done yet, as far as I have seen. But the club had a statement on its website regarding him the other day. It mentioned that they've received a good offer from Levante for a loan deal until the end of the season. It states that Ruiz is interested. However, the deal still needs international clearance, and it hasn't still, to this point, as far as I know, has not been confirmed yet. And Kidd actually mentioned this in his presser today, that this situation has not been confirmed yet by FIFA. What are your thoughts about all this? Do you think this will get done by the time the window shuts?
I suppose it wouldn't be Cotty's talk without having Brian Ruiz on, would it? You know, I'd like to see an end to this whole saga, really, because I feel really sorry for Ruiz. You know, I really like Ruiz. Believe it or not, I'd actually like
personally,
him.
Personally, I know
he's a nice guy. He's a stylish, classy player. It's just he doesn't fit our style at Fulham, and he doesn't fit English football, as far as I can tell. But I wish him all the best. And to me, he's actually looked really miserable. And, you know, no one wants to be miserable. You want to be playing football, and you want to be enjoying yourself. I mean, I'm sure people play football for the money, but it'd be much more fun to play for enjoyment. I'd play for enjoyment. The money would be a bonus for me if I could play professionally.
Right.
I'm sure for Ruiz as well, I think, you know, he's come from humble beginnings, and I'm sure he just wants to play the game. So I hope it all works out for him. I think the way that they were talking, I'm pretty confident it will go through. I think they said it was almost finalised. So,
right.
You know, they seem to finalise these things in 5 minutes when it suits them. So I can't see why it can't be finalised, unless there is some major disagreement somewhere. But I don't think, you know, the club said they've received a good offer.
Yeah.
What that actually means, I don't know. I still think, you know, from my point of view, the deal still is erring towards my four-fifths of you-know-what, rather than a big deal for Fulham, because it looks like we're not going to get much out of it apart from saving his wage bill. But, you know, I really hope it goes through. The interesting thing with this and the other deals as well are, you know, I guess there is this option on Brian Ruiz still that we don't know about. You know, is he going to go on this loan and at the end of the season that's it? Or will we exercise an option and try and extend him for another year and bring him back? I mean, it seems highly unlikely to me, but... and the same goes for obviously the other guys that have just gone out. I read somewhere that the Chris David deal, there was an option for permanent transfer as well. Not sure about Thomas Eisfeldt. So, I mean, for Ruiz, you know, let's just get it sorted, you know, and it's all some certainty out of the way for him and for the club, and then we can move on either with him or without him.
You know what, David? I have a feeling that one way or another we're going to get an answer in hopefully a few hours. And, again, I'm sorry that we are not doing our, you know, normal end of the transfer window special. I usually try to do it the last 2 hours of the window, but unfortunately I'm not able to do it this time, and maybe next summer I will be able to do it. But this summer I wasn't able to. You and Kyle did a very nice job. You did an excellent job, actually. But this window, I was not able to. But that does not mean that we cannot talk about the transfer window. And David, that's going to lead me to talk about the pair that you were just talking about them. Here's the official statement off of the Fulham website. Pair exit on loan. Chris David and Thomas Eisfeldt have both departed the club on loan for the remainder of the season. David has returned to his former team, FC 20, in the rest of the 2014-2015 campaign, while Eisfeldt will take in a spell in his native Germany with VfL Bochum in to Bundesliga. We wish both players best of luck during their loan spells. All right, David, what are your thoughts about the loan deals for both of these players?
Well, the cynic in me is saying, why are we getting rid of all our cams? Because it seems to be players from a certain position. You know, we seem to be getting rid of all of them. You know, what are we going to end up with? Just all central midfielders and no cams? Because, you know, Ruiz plays there, David plays there, Eisfeldt can play there.
That's right.
The Chris David one is a real mystery, because all season, you know, we've been saying this is his chance to come in the team, and he's never really got near it. And there's obviously something there that we don't know about, because in the flashes we've seen of him in the first team, he's looked pretty decent. And, you You know, everyone's been saying he's maybe the man who can play that cam role. You know, more so than Ruiz, more so than Kakanicic, more so than McCormack. Never had a chance, but, you know, he's not playing at the moment, so let's see what happens with that. If he's not going to get in the team, send him out and then review the situation at the end of the season. For me, Thomas Eisfeld is disappointing, but it's not a big loss at the moment because we've hardly seen anything of him at all, really. You know, for me, you know, when he has played in the first team, I think he's flattered to deceive a bit. Really, he hasn't done too much. A couple of maybe promising touches, but I remember like a poor header at home in the last few minutes in front of goal. I can remember him at Rotherham. He didn't really create much impression. He was given a start there. So again, perhaps give him some playing time elsewhere and review the situation. It's not a big loss at the moment for us because, as I say, it's not like he's been featuring. It's just a concern that we seem to be getting rid of, you know, players from the same position. And you know, our options in that cam role, if Kit is going to play the diamond, there's not that many people left to play the cam at the moment. We have Kaká, who is, you know, it's not his natural position, but he's looked okay there. But the jury's definitely out. We have Roberts that could play there, but, you know, a lot of people saying he's too lightweight and, you know, he's not going to get a go anyway. And then we have the conundrum, which is, you know, McCormack, and we've just got him back up front. Do we want him playing there? So unless someone's about to come in and surprise us, I don't really know. Let's say you could put LVC there, but I think it would be a bit of a waste as well, really.
Yeah, it's an interesting situation with the cam roll right now. I'm glad that you really dissected that, because if you look at it, with all these players going out, what's going to happen now? Does that mean that Ross McCormack is going to be playing more in that role? David, we've already talked about it. Honestly, I'd rather see him up front, so I hope that's not going to be the situation. You already mentioned Kaká. You know, Kaká can play it, but, again, maybe not his natural position. So then what do you do? Do you, you even mentioned Roberts. You've been talking about Roberts for a while, so maybe that's part of the plan. I don't know. You know, again, and we don't know if there could be a last minute player coming in. We just don't know at this point. So it's an interesting situation when you see players that normally play that position already leave the club. You know, it does leave this gap at that particular position. So it's a curious situation, David. And I'm glad that you really nailed this one. You know, again, we're going to have to see how this all plays out. Does this just mean that we are going to use the players that we currently have and make do, or is he going to change, go to a more different formation, go to more flat 4-4-2? I don't know. Again, it's just an interesting situation with Kit Simons. All right. Before we move on and go to the Cottage Talk Controversy Roundtable, you already started the show, David, by talking about some of the things you're seeing on social media, on Twitter specifically. So I'm just going to ask you, are you unhappy with the January transfer window? Do you want to see them sign more players, or are you fine with the way things are right now and more worried about, say, over the summer?
Well, the January transfer window is always difficult anyway. You can get held to ransom if you're not careful. But I think, you know, you always want to see some sort of activity. You want to see some intent. And at the moment, there doesn't seem to be much intent. And we are slowly losing, you know, players and without necessarily replacing them. Yes, we do have a good crop of youngsters and we have a very big squad, so I understand that we need to trim that squad a bit. But I still think, I talked about yesterday the fact that we have several strikers, but we don't have, apart from maybe McCormack, someone who is, you know, is very, very good or consistently good. And, you know, maybe, you know, we need to see someone like a Jordan Rhodes type figure come in. We need to see the club showing that intent. I know it's difficult in January. You will get robbed if you're not careful.
Right.
And there are other positions which we identified. You know, goalkeeping we are still short on. The fullback situation is kind of okay. You know, the Ashley Jazz Richards situation plugs the gap, I guess, until maybe Hoogland is back. But I don't know. I do feel a bit uncomfortable with it, and the fact that we haven't really been investing very heavily at all in positions that I think many people have identified as being weak in. And, you know, an attacking midfielder, we talked about that in the summer. We said we need to bring a good one in. You know, they brought Ruiz back and put him in the side, but for me it hasn't really worked. He's done okay, but you know, Kit said he knew he was going in January, and so it was, you know, this is what we talked about before. You know, do you put a player in that you know is going to leave? Maybe his heart wasn't in it. I think we'd have been better signing someone outright to play in that position. You know, people talked about, you know, people like Henry Lansbury, for example. You know, people who are quite proven. You know, he showed at the Cottage the other week. He's a great player, Henry Lansbury, I think, from what I saw. Someone like that to get in there. There's been other people talked about as well, the Bournemouth guy and people from abroad. So it does concern me a little bit. I have to say that, you know, we're just kind of letting it run, and we need to start rebuilding ASAP. We don't want to be falling too far behind, because other teams that, you know, are getting ahead of shoulders above us. You know, look at the teams this season, the teams that you wouldn't necessarily predict to do well, and they're already ahead of us. And we're a team that was only in the Premier League last year, and we still have the benefit of the parachute payments. You know, the longer this goes, for me, the harder it will be to get back up. And we have a young team. We need some experience in there, I think. We need the right blend between the young players and some new players. And yes, I understand the arguments about the loan side, people plugging a gap, but then maybe if we are going to lose the loan players again, what does that leave us with? Unless they have identified clear targets for the summer. For example, Fofana, when Fofana goes back to Man City, do they have a clear target to play in that position? Have they got someone they've identified already that they want and they're going to go out and get?
Well, that's my issue. David, we're going to talk about that in a little bit. That's my issue with the loan situation with Fulham. We're definitely going to talk about that.
So you see, it's like, for me, I understand that we need to trim the squad. There's certainly a lot of dead wood to get rid of. But, you know, that we're also quite weak in some positions, or we don't have a lot of options. And say up front, it's very much of a muchness up front, isn't it? You know, we talked yesterday about this, and this is why even bringing Matt Smith back as a different option might be something that they should have considered, really. Not that I'm necessarily, you know, particularly endeared to his style of play. As I say, you know, look at Blackburn, look at Jordan Rhodes, people like that. Just simple football, get an early cross in, headed past the goalkeeper. And that's something that Matt Smith would do, given the service, you would presume. And that's not something we really do much at the moment. So Hugo and Musa and Corley are kind of all similar in a way, although they're different players. You know, they have their own advantages and disadvantages, but not one of them is a complete player. And we're still going back to the fact that at the moment our most successful partnership has been McCormack and Hugo. And Hugo hasn't really been on fire, especially not lately. He's been really off fire.
Right.
He had a good spell, had a purple patch. But, you know, he was missing chances then, but he was still putting the ball away. And since then, the wheels have fallen off a bit for him. And, you know, Corley hasn't come in and set the world alight. Musa hasn't either. So, you know, as I said before, perhaps we should have been going out there and looking for this, you know, this utopia of a great striker. And yes, it would cost us money, undoubtedly. If you go and sign even a Jordan Rhodes from the Championship, it would cost you money. But if you can start banging the ball in the net, you know, that's the epitome of the game, isn't it? That's what you need to be doing. You need to be putting the ball in the net if you want to be winning games and moving up the league.
Right. Well, listen, David, I agree with you on that. This is where I disagree with you. And I disagree with some of the talk about the situation right now. I don't want Fulham to bring in players just to bring in players to appease the fans. I want them to bring in players. Let me just stress that. I do. I want them to bring in the right players that are going to be a fit for a long-term fit. I don't want short-term fixes. I want a long-term fit. So if that means waiting until the summer to do it, I'm fine with that. I'm actually fine with that. And I hear where you're going on this. You know, again, you're afraid that we're going to get relegated again. There are fans that are afraid that we're going to get relegated. I get that. Because of what happened last season, it's a constant discussion. We're going to get relegated. We're going to fall behind. I don't think we've done any of that. I disagree with you on that. I think they have a plan in mind, and I think they're looking to add. Ross McCormack was part of that plan. They brought him in over the summer. He's, you know, again, maybe not the player that you want them to for the Premier League, but he's a player that I think that can get him back to the Premier League. I want them to bring in a player, target someone of that ilk, bring him in. If they can't find that player, David, you keep with these youth players. Maybe you sprinkle in a couple of experienced players but I want them to be the right fit. I don't want them just to bring in players. Again, I disagree with that, with that philosophy. Well, we need to buy players because it's the January transfer window. No, you don't. You need to bring in the right players. Don't just buy players for the sake of buying players. That's the issue I have right now. Kit mentioned that he wanted to bring in the right players. If he finds them, bring them in. We still have a few hours left, David. I'm not against it. I'm just not going to be totally devastated if they don't. You know, again, listen, our co-host Giannis really wants them to sign players. I get why people want them to sign players. I guess I feel a little bit differently about that. I like the squad. Do I think that they need to add a few pieces? Absolutely. But if they don't, I think that they can do it over the summer because this is a long-term project. We are in the rebuilding mode. The chances of us getting promoted this year are very slim to none to make the playoffs. Let's be realistic here. Let's look towards the future, and let's let the young players play and find players that can help them grow as players, as a team. So that's where I fall on that, David. I'm not disagreeing with you wanting to bring in players. I disagree with this fact that we're falling behind other teams. I disagree with that. I totally disagree with you on that. Sorry.
I never mentioned relegation. When I said falling behind, I wasn't talking about relegation.
No. You were talking about getting back to the Premier League. I understand what you're talking about. You're thinking that we could fall down, kind of like how Wigan have, how Bolton have. I see where you're going on that. I just see the difference between us and some of those clubs is our academy, how deep our academy is, how many young players we have. I don't see that happen to Fulham. They do need to bring in experienced players. I will agree with you, David. I just don't see this thing that we're falling behind everyone else. I just disagree with that. I disagree on. But it's okay.
Example.
It's okay to disagree, right?
No, that's fine. I'm just saying as an example, though. Should we be behind Brentford? I say no, we shouldn't be.
Absolutely not. Absolutely. Very good point. We should not be behind Brentford. No, you're right.
And that's what I mean about falling behind. We should not be in a position where we're behind Brentford. And that's no disrespect to Brentford, because much as we like to have a rival with them, you know, it's fantastic that it's fantastic a club with their means have done what they've done. You know, it's a credit to football to get someone there. And Bournemouth as well, of course. You know, Bournemouth is a fantastic story. I love to see clubs who have, you know, done things like that. But should
Absolutely.
We be behind Brentford? You know, with the backing that we have, and you know, apparently the money we have, the squad we have, even the support we have, we should not be behind Brentford, and that's what I mean by falling behind.
Listen, I get what you're saying. I just don't think panic buys in January is the answer, David. That's all.
No, that's right. I wanted to thank three people, actually, Russ, very quickly. I wanted to thank Briefcase Ben. I want to thank Briefcase Ben, Mike Gregg, and Simon Patey for boosting the numbers of the Forest preview show, because they've just been listening to that rather than this one.
Okay. Well, listen, Ben's great. I've told you this several times. Ben and I might disagree, but I have much respect for Briefcase Ben. And, you know, I told him he could come on a show sometime and co-host. Who knows? We might get Briefcase Ben on here. And, of course, always a big fan of Mike Gregg and Simon Petey as well. So good shout out there, David. All right, let's move on. Let's get into the Cottage Talk Controversy Roundtable. I have two subjects. One came directly from you, David. We'll get to that in a little bit. But let's start here. I definitely won't want to talk about this because we are talking about the loan situations. So here's my first Cottage Talk Facebook question I put on the Cottage Talk Facebook page. Should Fulham be featuring loan players consistently who will not be part of Fulham's long-term future? Now, again, what I mean consistently, I mean starting every match. I'm talking about playing significant minutes if we don't think that they're going to be part of the long-term future of Fulham Football Club. What are your thoughts about this, David?
Well, I know this is obviously what's got Yanis's goat up the other day. And, you know, how long does someone have to be at a club on loan for them to justify a starting place? Now, Fofana, for example, is one of the ones that obviously people are talking about. Richards is the one that, you know, the other people are talking about. Now, I said to you the other day, my take on the Jazz Richards situation was that he was basically cover for Grimmer, or cover for that right-back role, until Hoogland is back, because Grimmer's played a lot of games and perhaps he's in danger of getting burnt out. And I said perhaps Grimmer, Richards wouldn't be able to play on Tuesday because he's either cup-tied or he's ineligible. And that meant this Saturday was the only chance to give Grimmer a rest. And maybe Grimmer needed a rest. And by the sound of it, you know, that's what's kind of the case, because Kit said that Richards is not available tomorrow night, so obviously we assume Grimmer will be back. So I do understand in that respect.
Okay.
You know, if you can bring a lone player in who's going to either cover and protect an existing squad member, that's fine. And if they're going to be an improvement, then it's fine to a point as well. It's a very difficult balance. I mean, you know, Fofana, again, same situation, isn't it? Who is he keeping out the team? Well, on Saturday, no one, because at the end of the day, we played our own three players ahead of him. So, you know, you could say he played at Sunderland because Parker wasn't in the team. He didn't play at Blackburn. Parker was back. Tomorrow, who knows, Parker's doubtful again. He may be back. So he might not. Now we have Tunnicliffe back. He may not be keeping any of our players out. He's there as cover. He's there as an alternative. I mean, I throw in the hat once again, Brian Ruiz. Yes, he was our player, but we knew he was leaving. Why did we build a team around him? Or why do we try to build a team around him? And this is not against Ruiz. This would be the same about anyone. If someone's going to be leaving in January, or you've got a pretty good idea they're going to be leaving, you know, do you set up a system and a team to work around them? Or do you actually just exclude them and say, well, hold on a minute, you know, they're not going to be here. Let's work out a more long-term strategy. So, yes, the loan players are slightly different, but then if you've got your own player like that, I don't know. I don't think it's so different at the end of the day, because you still have to end up changing the team around. And, you know, Ruiz playing could have meant that Chris David was denied a place, for example, and Chris David could have gone on to make that place his own, and, you know, the whole perspective would have been different. So I'm kind of ambivalent about it, really. I can see both sides of the argument.
Yeah.
I don't like changing teams for change's sake. I don't like the rotation for rotation's sake. But you do need sometimes to make the odd change here and there. And I get the impression that Grimmer was tired, and I think he needed a break, and that gave him a break. So he will be back tomorrow night. The interesting thing will be next week, because we have, I think, three games again next week, if I'm right. Will there be a rotation there, or who will play all those games? And then you might get a better measure of judging, you know, why Richards is actually here.
No, listen, it's a good point on both players. And, you know, again, we're focusing on Jazz Richards, but the subject could also go to Seiko Fofana. You brought that up as well, David. And listen, I think Seiko Fofana has improved over time, and he's going to be with us to the end of the year. But I guess where I fall on the loan situation, and I've seen comments, well, if you're bringing in loan players, you have to play them. You know, why else bring them in? And I get that. But here's my thoughts on loan players. I think that you bring them in under certain circumstances. When you, like you said, when you need cover, when you are rebuilding like Fulmar, see, this is where I have an issue with it. I'd rather play our own players than play loan players. You know, because we're trying to build something here, and I don't think Seiko Fofana, like you've mentioned, David, Manchester City are probably not going to sell him to us. We've already had this discussion. So, again, if he's here just to be a part of the squad, you know, again, is he helping Fulham build something, or is he just there for more of his benefit? Is it also Fulham's benefit, if you get where I'm going? Because we do need to think about the future. I think he's going to be a fine player. I'm curious to see how much Fulham will actually get out of Seiko Fofana, you know, especially if Kit plays him each and every week instead of one of our own players. That's where I go. The Jazz Richards situation, again, is a curious one because of Jack Grimmer. You bring up a point that and that could play itself out. You could be right on that. But I want to see Jack Grimmer play. You know, again, I call me crazy. I'd like to see him continue to play. I see where you're going on this. You think that he needs a rest. So you see the value of Richards, plus he's cup tied. So again, we're gonna get Grimmer back, and then of course we're gonna get Hoogland back at some point. I do agree with you. I think he was brought in for cover. You know, again, who knows when Hoogland's gonna be back? You know, we don't have a set time on that. So he might be more for cover. I guess I just want to see our own players play on a regular basis. Does that make sense, David?
No, it does, but, you know, it begs the question, if you can get someone in even on loan, let's say they could bring someone in on loan, like, let's say they could bring Lionel Messi in on loan to the end of the season.
Oh, well, come on.
By bringing him in, he could get us promoted back to the Premier League, even though he's got no chance of staying and he'd be back to Barcelona. Would this argument apply, though, or is this argument only applied to that situation?
That I want loan players. If loan players can get us back to the Premier League, if we are in a position, David, that I feel and everyone feels, especially Kit and the club feels, that, hey, this is a season we can get promoted, then you bring in loan players to get you over the hump. I'm all for that. This is a situation where I don't think Fofana can get you over the hump. That's my issue.
No, but it's kind of a bit double standards then, isn't it? So we don't mind loan players taking the place of our own players if they're good, but if they're not that good, then we don't. And so it's kind of a bit of a chicken egg as well, because these guys, you know, I'm sure the Fofana deal in a way benefits Man City more than it benefits us, almost, because they want to get him playing. They want to get him playing. And it's
right.
We're doing them a favour more than the other way around. But
right. Let's
see what happens. Now we have Parker and LVC and Tunnicliffe all around. Let's see how many times Fofana starts, assuming those three are still fit.
Right. And David, again, I'm not against Seiko Fofana playing. I'm not against him starting sometimes. I'm not against him coming off the bench. I just don't want to see him get in the way of some other players. That's all. If he's part of the mix, that's fine. But in the very beginning, David, he was starting pretty much every match. And, you know, again, I think that you want that from a young player. You want a player to get, you know, to really get in sync with the team. But then I keep going back to the fact, well, Seiko Fofana is not a long-term solution. So I guess I go back and forth from this. I want loan players if they're going to help us, you know, with a goal. And the goal would be, like you said, to get back to the Premier League. This isn't going to be the season for me. And I think you would agree with that. So, again, maybe this isn't the right situation for Seiko Fofana. You know, Jazz Richards is a different situation because it might be for cover. I just would rather feature our own players unless we need cover or need help or in a situation when we're going for it, when we need a player that could take us over the top. Then a player, you know, in your Lionel Messi scenario, which again, of course, you know, Lionel Messi, if he goes back to the Premier League, of course, David, that's, don't be ridiculous. But I guess for me, I want Fulham to come first. Does that make sense? I want Fulham to come first, not the other teams. I feel that Man City is taking advantage of Fulham in this situation. That's how I feel. And I think they're benefiting a hell of a lot more than Fulham are. That's all.
No, you're right. The situation is, let's say Lionel Messi was available and we could get back to the Premier League. That would just create its own problems, though, wouldn't it? Because at the end of the day, if this squad found themselves in the Premier League next year, my God, it would be a tough season, wouldn't it? So, you know,
it would, David. You know, again, it's all about timing. You know, again, here we are. We're talking about getting promoted. And if you really think about it, you know, we've talked about this. It probably wouldn't be a bad thing for this season to be the rebuilding year to get us ready for the big push next year. Because, again, you're right. We can't stay down in the championship too long because then you become one of those teams. You don't want to become one of those teams, one of those average teams. You want to be always building towards something, you know. And, again, it's a slippery slope because, again, you want to rebuild, but you want to be building towards getting back to the Premier League. And that's why these loan situations make me a little nervous right now, not always, but right now for us, I just want to see us using more of our own players. And it could work out, like you said, with the Seiko Fofana situation. But anyways, so that's my opinion on that. I want to share some of the comments from the Fulham supporters on this because I just found it an interesting subject. So let's start with Tamada Rahman. I really think Kit made a bad decision today with Richards over Grimmer. He actually commented this, obviously, on Saturday. He still needs to iron out these mistakes if he wants to manage us in the future. That's from Tamada Rahman. Giannis chimed in. Russ, I agree. This, for me, was the final straw. He's obviously still upset about Kit. We do know that. Then our friend Briefcase Ben chimed in. Yes, of course. we should play loanies. What's the point of loaning players if we aren't going to play them? Now, listen, it's a valid point. It's a valid point. I get where Ben's going on that. I guess for me it's a timing thing. When do you bring in loan players? When do you not bring in loan players? Lee Randall says, play the loan players, or what's the point in loaning them? He, again, agrees with Ben and towards your point a little bit. Billy Robber wrote, for the rest of the season, no, we're not going up or down, so stick with our own youngsters. They will get the benefit of a promotion push next season. Not sure under Kit, though. So, again, Billy Robber's going more towards my thinking on this. Let's see. Ollie Minnis wrote, obviously you always want phone players to play as much as possible and gain experience, et cetera. But if we have a loanee who the manager thinks can do a better job on the day, then that player should play. We should still be aiming for a playoff spot. Interesting take there. Chris Lewis says, let's see, what did Chris Lewis add? I'm sorry, I just jumped over him. Just bear with me, David, because I'm trying to get all these comments in. Chris Lewis wrote, only bring in experienced players with something to prove as first-teamers. Drop Fofana. Nick Bomeke wrote, yes, as long as the reasoning makes sense. I think Rimmer may be struggling some with the amount of games, so bring Richards, an experienced championship player, for cover. Makes some sense. Better than Zveretic. All right, I'm just going to jump ahead because we have so many comments. Roger Lewis wrote, I dislike bringing in loan players for anything other than backup. I feel it's okay to loan out our youngsters for season-long loans to League One and Two clubs who may not be in a financial position to buy players. Very interesting take by Roger, because that actually benefits some of the League One and League Two clubs. Stuart Lovett wrote, I, for one, need to see ownership step up to the plate and prove they have ambition to move the club forward. Not much evidence of that so far. It sounds like Stuart is more of the feeling that the club's not doing enough to bring in players, just in general. All right. Anthony Evans said, I see loan players as a short to medium-term solution. Fofana, Richards are there to strengthen the team now. Okay, opinion may be divided on their ability, but it's a chance to try them out and buy for next season if they are good enough. The squad's still very young, and players need to be protected from burnout and injury. I think Kit does not have a balanced team yet. It's still a work in progress. And, again, we have many more comments. Many people chimed in on that. We just don't have the time to go through all of them. Thank you, everyone, for commenting on this Facebook page question. David, what are your thoughts about what I just shared from some of the Fulham supporters?
I think it seems people are pretty split. Some people are saying, yeah, well, if you get someone in on loan, you might as well use them. Other people are saying, no, you know, let's try and focus on what we have. I think it's clear that, you know, and until we actually see the team playing, it's hard to identify perhaps exactly where the deficiencies are, but I think we have a pretty good idea now, and we know, you know, it's been the same stories all year long. You know, the goalkeeping situation, the fullbacks, attacking midfield kind of thing, isn't it? Maybe wide men as well, but at the moment there hasn't been an issue because of we've tended to play with a narrow system all the time. You know, if Kit suddenly decided to play with a 4-4-2, then you'd be asking, well, hold on a minute. We have, of course, Kakanicic can play on one side. They're talking about sending Lionel Cole out on loan. I mean, you know, if they wanted to play with 4-4-2, maybe he should be someone who's knocking on the door as well. But I think you have to identify, you know, short-term weaknesses and plug those gaps if you haven't got a long-term solution. So I suppose I tend to favour the loan players if it's right for the team at that time.
Okay.
At the end of the day, it's all very well having the principle of having your own players in the team, but if they're not good enough to keep you in the league or whatever, then, you know, we the Great Escape season, you remember that?
Yes.
Yeah, we did that with loanies in the side. You know, some of them probably weren't even that good, not really, but they did a job. You know, we had Casey Keller in goal, who you all know well, obviously. And, of course, at right back, we had, well, what's his name, Paul, what's his face, the Canadian guy, at right back on loan as well. And they did a job, just about, because we were a bit deficient. I mean, that was a season, unfortunately, where Chris Baird had started and didn't establish himself. And Roy felt that he needed to plug a gap there. And we had goalkeeping issues as well. Of course, we went out and bought Schwarzer after that, and the rest is history. So there are times when it's very necessary, I think, or the manager will feel it's necessary to do these things. So
right.
I tend to agree with it if it fills a short-term need, if it can, you know, support your own players, if your own players can learn from it and, you know, or can get necessary rest. You do not want to be burning young players out, because that's what will happen if you play them week in, week out.
Okay. No, listen, good, very good points by you. And for me, really, it is, it's a timing thing. But I see where you're going on that. It's also a cover thing. It's also, you know, again, you don't want to be playing young players, you know, every single match. I see where you're going on that. I feel a little bit differently about that. I want the players to play, but I see your fear of burnout. But for me, it is all about timing. There is a time and place for it. I just don't know if right now is the right time for it. That's all. I just, you know, again, that's kind of why I wanted to bring it up, and it seems like fans are kind of split on it. So, very interesting topic. All right, David, I'm now going to go to your topic. This is your college soccer Facebook question, okay? Really, this is yours, and I'm glad that you suggested it. Here it is. Who has been the worst full manager since you've been a supporter? David, we have gotten a ton of responses on this, a ton. I can't go through all of them, but I'm going to start with you. You know, I'll share mine. I only go from 2007, so I'm limited, but give me yours.
Okay, well, I was trying to think off the top of my head without cheating, and when I started, Alex Stock had just taken over as manager. Now, he did a pretty good job, so he's not going to be in there. Then we had Bobby Campbell. He wasn't everyone's cup of tea. He got thrown out in the end, but he was okay. Then Malcolm McDonald, he did quite a good job, so did Ray Harford. He was replaced, I believe, by Ray Lewington, and as player manager, and, you know, and he, with a limited budget, I thought did okay as well. We then had the dark period of the 90s. We had Ian Branfoot. I may not have them in the right order, actually. We had Alan Dix, I think it was, Ian Branfoot, and we had Don Mackay. It'd probably be the other way around. It'd be Alan Dix, Don Mackay, and Ian Branfoot, I think, that way around. Now, Alan Dix, he unfortunately had the moniker of Dix Out sung around Craven Cottage. So the funny thing was, at that time, you know the fanzine we have, there's only one F in Fulham, yeah?
Yes.
David Lloyd. On the cover of that one episode, I remember a memorable cover which said Dix Out, Cox In, because they were talking about Arthur Cox coming as a joke. But ironically, when Kevin Keegan took over as manager, he actually did bring Arthur Cox in as one of his team. So we have Dix Out, Cox In. But
oh, that's crazy.
Enough penis jokes anyway. But yeah,
yes, so please, Alan David, please keep it clean. Please keep it clean.
Yeah, no, Alan Dix was pretty dire. And funny enough, he was at Bristol City around the same time as Roy Hodgson, so it's strange how those two have gone apart. Don Mackay, he was a great white hope. We came in and we thought, you know, he was a great manager, actually, or he would do a great job. But for some reason, it just didn't work, and he ended up being sacked at half-time by Jimmy Hill, I think, at Orion. And the trouble with him was that there was rumours that Jim Stannard and Glenn Thomas and other players were just bossing him around. He had no control over the players, and that they were just doing their own thing. They'd turn up for training when they want, and obviously that's not satisfactory. Ian Branfoot was not very popular, but he stepped aside to let Mickey Adams take over, and suddenly we realised that we had, you know, something quite good going on there. So I think Ian Branfoot was probably, I think he's a bit more maligned than he should have been. I think I would put definitely Alan Dix and Don Mackay below Ian Branfoot in that one. So obviously after Mickey Adams, the rest kind of started to become history, and, you know, we had Ray Wilkins, he weren't very good. Kevin Keegan was pretty good. Paul Bracewell, we talked about him the other day, his nickname was Purcell because he liked to keep clean sheets. Purcell as in the brand of washing powder, if you don't have it in the States. And then after that, we had Tigana, which was brilliant. Coleman, he did okay. And then, of course, the legend that was Laurie Sanchez. The thing with Laurie Sanchez is that, you know, he wasn't very good, but somewhere in all the mess, he did actually sign people like Chris Baird, Aaron Hughes, who became legends, Danny Murphy as well came in that time. So although he was pretty dire and he just went and ended up signing loads of players he knew from the Northern Ireland squad, he got some real gems in that as well. And of course, you know, Chris Baird, Danny Murphy and Aaron Hughes are like three of our all-time kind of legends from recent years. So
that's,
I think,
right.
Laurie Sanchez, as bad as he was, can't be the worst. He just can't be the worst. But, you know, and then, of course, Roy, wonderful Roy, Mark Hughes, although some people didn't like him, I thought he did okay. So So then we get on to Martin Yol. I don't know. I think we were in a decline when he took over. His hand was partly tied, but he will always be remembered for kind of, you know, what happened with Ruiz, what happened with Berbatov, and the decline, and you know, and everything else. So he was pretty bad in some ways, but I don't think he was the worst. And then, of course, we had whatever happened last season. And then, you know, last but not least, top of the shop for the worst manager has to be, he has to be the madman that was Felix McGath. I mean,
yeah,
it was just disarray. I mean, when you look at some of the players in the past, you know, Alan Dix was pretty poor, but he was working with nothing. We were skint, you know, we had no money. We had to beg just to sign people, you know, on loan and things in those days. But, you know, McGath come in with a good reputation. He didn't have a lot of time to save us, admittedly. But when you look at the way he's managed the players and destroyed their confidence, and it's not just about the players, because, you know, we know stories from around the club and rumours that even people behind the scenes were very unhappy with him and didn't get on with him. He was a real control freak. I mean, he did wonders for cheese sales, but, I mean, as a man manager, it was pretty poor. And yes, there were some good signings still, nevertheless, or some promising signings. You can't say all his signings were bad. But look at what he did to people like Lewis Holtby, who were like, you know, a young, energetic player. He kind of twice he's taken the kind of wind out of his sails now, as well, really. So, you know, I can go back a long way in memory, but I don't see I can better, or I should say worse than what Felix McGath was for Fulham. And he was just, if Brian Ruiz was a poor fit for English football, Felix McGath was an awful fit for Fulham.
Okay. Very good take there, David. You went through a good part of the history for you, and it's easy for me. It's Felix McGath. Again, Laurie Sanchez wasn't good. Yol wasn't great, but McGath was horrible. And basically, like you said, morale killer, player destroyer, you know, whatever you want to say, he destroyed the team. You know, again, his the way that he set up the team, the Felix Bingo, everything, it was just so horrible, and it went so wrong. You know, he came in a tough situation. I thought he made it worse. So for me, it's easy. It's Felix McGath. Felix the Cat is the worst. All right, let me read some of the comments from the Fulham supporters. Tom and Araman wrote, Wari or Felix, can't decide. John Joyce, McGath. Tom Garland, Wari Sanchez. Sean McElroy, McGath, I started following with Coleman, and it hasn't even been close. Mary Brennan said, Felix, just awful. Giannis chimes in, Alan Dix. Jason Geddes, McGath, Sanchez is a close second. Luke Aiken, McGath. Okay, so we have a lot of Felixes, but there are other ones in here. As you can see, Paul Steele, Alan Dix, period. Ben Reed, 100% McGath. Billy Rodber, the Mad German. William Byrne, Madman McGath. Joe Keeney, Sanchez. Chris Cox, Alan Dix. Let's see, Lee Randall, Yol followed by McGath. Dana Matassa, Magoo by a long shot, no question. Wayne Dyer, McGath, Nick East, Sanchez. So David, we're getting a little bit of everything here, but a lot of Felix McGath. Let's see what else we got. Colm Bugler has Brantford. Lucy Alice Ward, McGath. He was pathetic, saying he was going to help the club do better, but it was too late. We got relegated. He was a huge disappointment to us. Steve Butters, Penfold, a.k.a. McGath. Steve Snell, Brantford. David Phillips, Brantford. Mark Phillips, he did sign Hughes and Baird, but some other bad ones as well. Has to be the Mad German for doing so much damage in such a short-term period. Again, I think he was trying to talk a little bit about Laurie Sanchez, but for him, it's Mark Phillips. It's going to be Laurie Sanchez. Not Laurie Sanchez. It's going to be Felix McGath. Karen Kalera. Karen, if I said your name wrong, I really apologize. Sanchez edges McGath. Joe Fuller, between Sanchez and the Mad German, and we will survive them both. Trucker Dave, in my history, it's got to be McGath. And, David, it keeps going on and on. I can't tell you how many we've got. Anthea Evans, Felix McGath, Stuart Roberts. The best, worst was Alan Dix, as we could all sing Dix out. Okay, that's how we end. David, What are your thoughts about everyone's choice here? I shared a good amount of comments from the Fulham supporters on who is the worst manager. What do you think?
Well, Felix is an obvious choice because he was pretty dire, and of course he is the most recent one in everyone's mind. So I think, you know, it is an obvious choice. Obviously, you know, Alan Dix was pretty bad, and, you know, I did mention him as one of the worst. But he was working, you know, that was at the time when we nearly got merged into QP Haar, so things were very tight. We didn't have a bean to sort of play with.
Yeah.
And he had a great record at Bristol City, so, you know, it was, we thought he might do a job for us, but he just didn't work, Alan Dix. Sanchez, as I said, he was a bit mad as well, I think, but he brought in Baird, Hughes and Murphy, so he wasn't that bad. They were three of the mainstays of that successful side that Roy
right.
built and that got us the European final. So, you know, that a quarter of that was down to him, wasn't it? A quarter of that team was down to Sanchez single-handedly. So for that alone, I think McGath tips the balance for me most certainly. But,
okay.
you know, I think everyone has mentioned there, you know, people that, no one has mentioned someone ridiculous, let's say. You know, if someone came out and said, oh, actually, I thought it was Roy Hodgson, then they'd need shooting, wouldn't they? I mean, no one said anyone ridiculous there. So, you know, I agree with kind of, you know, everyone's opinion on that.
No, so do I, David. And listen, it was fun to do. You know, again, this is your idea, so kudos for you for suggesting it to me. And listen, we're going to do this each and every week because I want to try to find some interesting topics for us to debate, and listen, we can go back in the past. You know, again, you're excellent for that. We can think of, I don't know, who's your best player in the 90s, who's your best player in the 2000s. There are so many different things we can do. I'll come up with some ideas, and feel free to share your thoughts on that too, David. If you got an idea for our Cottage Talk Facebook page topic for me to put up there, you just let me know.
No worries.
All right. Let's move on. And again, this is going to be a shortened show. You know, again, for obvious reasons. You know, we have the match coming up, but you know, again, we certainly have a lot of shows coming up. And so let's get to this preview of Sunderland, David. And just to give you a little heads up on Sunderland, they are coming off of a 2-0 victory against Burnley. They are currently 14th in the Barclays Premier League table. They've only won 4 games this season. They've lost 8 and drawn 11. They've scored 21. They've given up 33 for a minus 12 goal differential. So that's that on Sunderland. You know, again, players to look out for. Adam Johnson is an obvious one that we should be concerned about. He leads them with 5 goals. Stephen Fletcher, obviously, is a goal scorer. He has 4 goals. And Connor Wickham as well. They also do have what I would call foam killer, Jermaine Defoe. He's there, too. I expect to see him tomorrow at Craven Cottage as well. All right, David, you saw them play Sunderland not too long ago. What are your thoughts about them going into this match? What do you expect to see from Sunderland?
Well, it's going to be difficult for them because they have to also balance their Premier League survival with a cut run. There's no point coming to London not to try and get something out of the game. They do have players that can hurt us. We didn't see Adam Johnson the other day because, obviously, he was injured. But he can be very dangerous. Stephen Fletcher can be very dangerous. Jermaine Defoe can be very dangerous, among others. So if those three all feature there, they would be the ones for me to watch out for. I didn't really see too much of concern otherwise. I mean, you know, they have some good, you know, experienced defenders, people like John O'Shea and Wes Brown when he's fit, and obviously Catamol as well if he's fit.
Catamol will be out for this match, David, just so.
Yeah, I thought that was the case. The weak link is Sebastian Coates, I think you pronounce it. It looks like Coates, but it's Coates. I've seen him a few times, and I'm not impressed by him, and I think if he's playing, he's the one we have to try and target. But
fantastic.
The thing for me for Sunderland, and also what the Sunderland fans were speaking to me about on the Metro last Saturday, was that they don't move the ball around very quickly. They don't get out of defence very quickly. It was a bit of a Fulhamish kind of scenario, actually, that, and this was what we noticed at the stadium. Like, they didn't really push the ball out that quickly. I mean, if they have Adam Johnson, I think that would counteract that a little bit. So I'm not sure if they're going to be coming at us too much tomorrow. It depends to say who they play, or will they just sit there and try and soak it up and catch on the break. It's kind of a bit what they did to us previously in the league, I think, wasn't it? They caught us on the break quite badly, actually.
Yes.
When they won at Craven Cottage in the Premier League.
Adam Johnson.
Yes, right, Adam Johnson. I think Fletcher as well, wasn't it, on one? But
I believe it was. You're right.
Yeah, in a previous game. I remember one was inside. It was played kind of a through ball, a diagonal played inside John Arnarisa to Adam Johnson, wasn't it, I think? And he just went and put the ball in. So definitely for me, watch, you know, if Johnson's playing, we're going to have to keep an eye on him. And that could be down to Stafelidis because he tends to play on the right, Adam Johnson. And then also, obviously, those two up front, Defoe and Fletcher. But, you know, we did okay up at Stadium, all right. Hutchinson and Bodoff did a great job there. And I would hope, I've seen people talking about changes, I've seen Mike talking about changes, but I'd hope probably those two played for consistency because they got used to playing with them the other week. And obviously, you know, in that game, Tunnicliffe also sat just in front of them and mopped up and did a good job as well. So we need to be tight again like that because maybe they won't throw too much at us. So we've got to be strong and take the game to them. And we controlled the game at Sunderland. And, you know, with a little bit more quality in the final third, I think we could have nicked it. And so there's no reason why we can't tomorrow night, but it depends down to Kit what he decides to do with the lineup as well.
Excuse me, absolutely, David. And listen, I wanted to share this from the Fulham website. This is team news. This is directly from the team, and I'm just going to read this. Kit Simons will make changes to his starting lineup on Tuesday with at least one enforced alteration. Jazz Richards featured in the FA Cup for parent club Swansea City earlier in the competition and so is ineligible for a fourth-round replay against Sunderland. You already mentioned that, David. On the injury front, you mentioned this as well, Captain Scott Parker, is Simon's main concern, and we will assess the rest of the squad following Saturday's exertions at Blackburn Rovers. This is obviously coming from Kit. Quote, Scotty Parker struggling a little bit with injury and illness, so he's one who might be struggling, he said in Monday's press conference. So, again, that's a little update on Scott Parker. You also mentioned something about Emerson Hyman talking about that he could be out for 5 or 6 weeks, and that's unfortunate. So that's really the team news that Kit was sharing the other day. Today, what am I talking about? It was just today. But again, that's the news heading into this match. Sorry about that. I got to get David back on the line. David dropped off. He should be coming back on because I want to ask David. I always like to ask David about the ref. So let me bring David back on. All right, David. What have you learned about the ref for this match?
Well, it's not a very good omen for us. I mean, it's not that he's a bad ref, but it's Paul Tierney, who was the ref for the 5-0 defeat to Watford the other week. So, you can't say he refed it badly because I think I felt he was a little bit officious at times, but I don't think you could really question what he did too much. He is someone who's on the cusp of Premier League. In fact, the rules actually state, I believe, that from now onwards, that only Premier League referees can ref the FA Cup. And if any of the sides are a Premier League side, they should have a Premier League ref there from the fourth round anyway. If you had two Championship sides, you could have a Championship ref, but because he has refed one game in the Premier League, I believe, he is eligible to ref this game as a so-called Premier League ref, as a select group ref. And as I said to you before, when we played Watford, he is one of these being groomed for kind of full-time progression to ref in the Premier League. So they do think highly about him. And I can't say that he had a bad performance at Watford, but obviously, you know, the game was clouded by that early sending off of Bettinelli. And look at his record, he does have quite a high card count, which it kind of goes hand in hand with, you know, the refs who tend to stick to the rules and be the most efficient seems to be the ones who impress the bosses. The refs who you know, are lenient and don't give the decisions when they should be given are the ones who get marked down and don't get moved on. So, obviously, he ticks the boxes for the assessor's point of view. They like what he does, the way he refs. So he's not afraid to give a card, as we saw, and that'll be the case that we have to watch out for tomorrow. But saying that, obviously the match at the Stadium of Light, you know, we played in a, you know, a very nice way. And, you know, I don't think we had any cards at all, did we, if I can remember rightly. I know obviously Sunderland had the red card and everything. So we just need to fear that, but we just have to watch out, you know, that we don't want to get stuck in that trap of making silly mistakes and getting punished in the way we did. But let's just hope that the Watford result was completely to do with the way that we started and the way that Watford started, as opposed to any influence on the ref, which I'm sure wasn't the case.
No, you're probably right about that, David. But, you know, I always appreciate when you do your homework and share your thoughts on the ref. It's very helpful. Seriously, it's actually one of the best parts of the preview is you sharing your thoughts on the ref. And more often than not, you end up being right about it. So, again, I appreciate you sharing that information. All right, David, as I always ask you, what do Fulham need to do to win this match and move on in the FA Cup?
We need to start strongly. We need to keep control of the game like we did the Stadium of Light. We need to take the game to them. We don't want to be, you know, giving away an early goal again like we have been doing. And at the Stadium of Light, it was easier for us because we controlled the game, and the pressure was really on Sunderland because their crowd got on their backs. That's not going to be so much the case tomorrow. That obviously it's our crowd we have to please. I don't know what the crowd will be like. But they will bring down a good following, Sunderland, but they won't be under the same pressure as they are at home. At home, they had a very poor record. They've been under a lot of pressure, and we added to that the way we played. Tomorrow, I think we need to take the game to them. We can't just sit there and frustrate them. We need to take the game to them, but we need to be strong and not give away an early goal, because that is a real, you know, a real shot in the foot. So,
listen, I agree with you.
Try and
go ahead, David.
I'm Forest,
sorry.
You know? Sorry, try to start like we did against Forest.
Yeah. You know what was very frustrating, David, going back to our last match? Why, you know, again, I think it was Mike Gregg, that has pointed out that we are one of the worst in the championship of giving up the first goal. And it drives me nuts that we so often play from behind. Wouldn't it be nice to play from ahead every once in a while? So I agree with you on getting that early goal. I think that's key in every match, but honestly, I think they need to be doing it more often because they're not doing it enough. They're not coming out strong enough to get that first goal. They need that first goal. And I think against a team like Sunderland, I think it would be important. So good points by you, David. All right. Who needs to really excel here, David? Who needs to have an exceptional match for Fulham to get this victory? Who's your key player here?
Well, I think this is the time for McCormack to show what he can do, because we had all this talk about him going back up front and then all this talk about him playing against Sunderland to show, you know, he's never played in the Premier League, to see how he can compete at Premier League level. And then he came on for a few minutes. Well, he came on for a reasonable period of second half at Stadium of Light and really didn't do very much, to be honest with you. I think he was quite disappointing. So I think, McCormack, this is your chance tomorrow. Show you can do against Sunderland what you did against Forest, and that will be the real difference. But obviously we also have, hopefully, you know, the benefit of LBC now a little bit more, you know, back on steam again and doing what he does. And so, you know, I think he was a little bit tentative and played within himself up at Sunderland. He did okay, but he can do more than that. So I think it will be McCormack and then maybe LBC behind him to try and, you know, push us forward.
Okay, fantastic, David. All right, let's go to your formation. I have a feeling it's going to be a diamond. You know, again, just a feeling. And then give me your starting 11. Your starting 11, what's prefaces? This is not Kit's starting 11. You're starting 11.
Well, I've seen nothing that wasn't a diamond that's worked for us, really, so I will be going with a diamond again. And it will be the usual suspects at the back once again.
Yep.
Bettinelli, Grimmer, and I think we've got it. I've seen clamours for Burn to come in, but for me, this is my starting 11. I'm going to keep Hutchison and Bodiroff, if fit, back in there. They played up at Stadium of Light. They contained Fletcher and they contained Defoe, so keep them in there. Staff lead us at left back because there isn't a lot of choice still, really. I know Kavanagh is probably close to fitness, but for me, he's not a left back, or he hasn't performed a left back. In the middle, I'm going to play Tunnicliffe in the holding role, and I'm going to play Fofana and LVC either side of him.
Okay.
And I'm going to play Kakanicic as cam,
And I like
front,
it.
It'll have to be Hugo and McCormack up front, because they are the only two that have really functioned as a partnership. And Hugo did have that great shot at the end when he came on. They didn't really have a chance, Hugo and McCormack, against Sunderland, to give them a good chance, I think, tomorrow. Corley has been missing too many chances, and Moose's all-round play doesn't warrant him a starting place. You'll note I'm leaving Scott Parker out on the basis that, one, we've got important games ahead. We've got an important home game on Saturday, and also on the fact that if he's not fully fit or well, he should be left out. And Tunnicliffe did a great job in the holding role at the Stadium of Light, so I let him do it again.
David, if I could get a message to Kit, I would say listen to David Holley's starting 11. I agree with it 100%. 100%, David. You put out the lineup that I would put out. This to me is the lineup for the match tomorrow. And if you get it right, I'm going to be the first to say, David, you got it right, and you should get it right, because this should be the starting 11 tomorrow. I'm backing you on this. This is the best lineup right now, because Parker's injured, then this changes things. He still could play, but I agree with you. I think you sit him out, let Tunnicliffe play that role. He played it well. You saw it at the Stadium Light. I like this starting 11. I'm backing David Holley on this. All right. I like it, David. You got me all excited. I like the starting 11. All right. Let's go to predictions. And I put it on, as always, I put it on the Cottage Talk Facebook page. Here are the predictions. Then I'll go to you. Tomina Rahman wrote, considering we did well to hold them to a draw away from home, and our most potent attackers being on the bench, I could realistically see us snatch a 1-0 victory. Okay. Ben Reed, this is Briefcase Ben, by the way. It all depends on how many changes Kit makes. If it is a real second-string lineup with 5 or 6 changes, then I see us losing. If it's just a matter of Grimmer coming back and Fofana covering for Parker, then I reckon we will make a good game of it. 2-1 win. That's his prediction. Alf Russell, why don't we talk about no players coming in, no ambition? Is it because Kit does not have a clue, or the chairman lost interest? So Alf Russell's not even going through a prediction. He's just talking about the current Fulham situation. And Thea Evans, 1-1 after full time, no goals in extra time, but Fulham to win on penalties. On, oh, the drama. Okay, I don't know if I can handle that drama. Reg Hollis, 3-0 to Sunderland. Okay, Lee Randall has 2-1 to Sunderland. Roger Lewis, too many unknowns for me, but in our starting lineup, and there's I claim the fifth on this one. Okay, so Roger's not going to do anything on that. Matthew Camp, 2-0 to Fulham, 2 goals from Ross, only if he plays up front. All right, David, to you.
Well, I just want to see the carnage of another fixture kerfuffle. So I want us to win as well, because it messes up Beth Powell, because she was coming to the Ipswich match on the Saturday, and that won't be till the Wednesday now, I believe, so she tells me. So that will mess her up, so that's good. And also, it will mean I'll have to go to Bradford on a Sunday afternoon, which will be very difficult as well. And your Cottage Talk show will be messed up for that day as well. So I like seeing turmoil, Russ. I love seeing the turmoil.
Okay.
So,
okay. Fantastic.
And moreover, Russ, I want to see us win, obviously. I want to see us win.
Yeah.
And as you know, if we can get a result and get through to Bradford, you know, I love Bradford to bits for what they did, but it's a match that we could win as well. And then we're in the quarter final, and you know what a wonderful boost it could be for a young squad to get that kind of, you know, that far in the cup competition. So we've got to win it. Being Fulham, being Craven Cottage, being tense, I think something like a 2-1 maybe. If we're going to win it, a 2-1 to Fulham. I can't see a steamrolling them. It'd be wonderful, but something like a 2-1, I could imagine. Either we'll go behind and pull it back, or perhaps we could get our nose in front but then give away a goal and be hanging on with our skin of our teeth. So 2-1 to us.
Okay. David, that was going to be my score, so we are right in sync today. I'm going 2-1 to Fulham. I'm going to say Jermaine Defoe scores for them, and guess who scores for Fulham? Yes, 2 goals from Ross McCormack.
I
would it be a show without
Brady
me predicting
get,
2 goals from Ross McCormack?
Yeah.
Of course not. All right, David.
This was a great show,
honestly. You were great. I'm sorry if I'm a little punchy. I've only had about 2.5 hours of sleep. So if you're listening to this show and I sound a little punchy, that's probably the reason why I'm still kind of over the moon with the New England Patriots winning the Super Bowl. So please understand when listening to this show that my voice sounds a little a little raspy here, and I might sound a little skittish, so I apologize. I'll do better on the next show, everyone. All right, David, I will be talking to you soon again. Excellent show, my friend.
No, thanks very much, Russ, and, you know, get yourself some sleep. I know you never sleep much anyway, but last night must have been a new low for you.
It was, David. I think I've only slept 2.5 hours, so I'm very tired.
Well, if I can give you any sort of empathy on that, it reminds me of the night that we beat Hamburg at Craven Cottage in second leg, because I think I got home about 2 a.m, back up to Lincolnshire. And funny enough, on Lincolnshire, just on a sideline, I don't know if you've seen, Andy Buckley-Taylor comes from about a few miles from me. He actually
grew
up around here.
I know
he
does.
Yeah, the other day we were almost neighbours at one point. But yeah, I got back to Lincolnshire about 2 a.m, and you know I couldn't get to sleep after. I was buzzing, and I was up half a night buzzing after we beat Hamburg. And then of course I had to be up at 7 a.m. to buy the tickets for the final. so I had very little sleep that night as well. I was completely on adrenaline. So I know where you're coming from, my friend. And so just try and make up for a bit tonight, yeah? And great show, and look forward to speaking to you whenever, next time, yeah?
Yep, no, David, listen, you know, again, I am going on pure adrenaline. It is a wonderful thing. And, you know, again, what was so great, and, you know, and you talked about the Hamburg experience for you, and it is similar for me. You know, it really is, and the fact that I could watch this Super Bowl victory with my children, it was just a wonderful thing, and I'm still, you know, I'm still buzzing, and the team's flying in tonight. We might go and meet them at Gillette Stadium when they arrive, and you know, it's just a wonderful time for me. So thank you for mentioning that, David. All right, let's move on. Let's wrap up the show. Before we go, just a reminder: you can download College Talk on iTunes and on the Stitcher Radio app, which is available on the iPhone, iPad, and the Android. Also, you can now listen to College Talk on the TuneIn app. That's how I listen back to the show, which is available at most app stores for your mobile device. Well, that's it for the show. For David Holley, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to College Talk.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Cheers, David. Boys and girls.